But you know what? There are also arguments good for the religious person. And on page 55, we see that the two paragraphs that tell both the religious and the non-religious person, the atheist, the agnostic, and the deeply religious person, exactly what the problem is. Actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured, blocked off by calamity, bad things happening, by pomp, a sense of self-importance, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. The next paragraph. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. But he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. Deep down within us is the fundamental idea of God, whether it's a religious God or whether it's just things that are the things that we believe in, whether they're ideas or some kind of living creature or living being or something with some personality of some kind. The problem is it's been blocked off from us and we can't see it or feel it. And that's the answer to the religious person who has not found relief from the bondage of food. And that's what this program does. It gets rid of the blocks that separate us from the God that's deep down within us. It reawakens our passion. Remember, I talked about Frank Buchman finding a way to reawake the passion that he had for the God that he believed in. All that happens here, and this is this wonderful description, is when you do the steps, the blocks to that God are removed. And so from the heart goes the message of whatever your God is to your head and governs your head. You have to get rid of the blocks. And as we'll see, that whole idea is carried forward when we talk about step four. They talk about, just blank the words. They talk about getting rid of things that block us from the sunlight of the Spirit. So we get rid of the blocks and God flows up. And that is a description to both the deeply religious person, to the atheist and the agnostic. All that's going to happen is that the things that you deeply believe in will now become your passion. And you won't be distant from them anymore. And when I look back at my life before OA, I will see that. I believed in some things, but I knew I wasn't living according to them. I was living much more according to my own sense of what I wanted out of life. And that's true for the deeply religious people I've spoken to when they've worked this program. Yeah, sure, they believed in God, but they weren't living the beliefs that they had. And what this does is help us live those beliefs and give us a guide for how to live according to what we believe in. So I don't miss not having a God in the religious sense, because I have a spiritual wholeness. I have a direct connection, as long as I keep working the steps, between the God in my heart, the things I believe in my heart, and my mind. And thus, that direct connection on a day-to-day basis, sometimes it's a little fuzzy, sometimes a little static, but on a day-to-day basis, as long as I keep that direct connection, I live a life that's sane. Now, from a practical point of view, the effect of living a life that's sane means that I look at food that I know is a problem for me, that creates cravings, and I say, why would I eat this stuff? It's poison. Now, that's what I came in for. I get a much better thing. I get this fourth dimension of existence that the big book talks about. But I came in simply to get sane. And so Hamlet says, by indirection, find direction out. I mean, I'm taking an end run around this problem. I want to stop eating compulsively. And my answer turns out to be taking a right and finding God of some kind. And once I find sort of a direct connection between what I believe in and who I am, somehow I get sane. And it just happens. And we'll see that promise when we get to step nine later on today. The promise is it just happens. We weren't looking for it. It just happens. And that's the miracle of this program. So this chapter is a wake-up call for everyone. And when we get to working with others tomorrow, we get to sponsoring and carrying the message, We'll see how tough the big book tells you to talk to the religious person who says, I know about God. I know everything about God. I'm deeply religious. And the answer that you say, you know what you say to that person? Clearly, it's not working it. Clearly, you're not working what you believe in, because otherwise, you wouldn't have your problem. That's pretty tough talk. But I have said that. I have a friend in this program who, well, she's not in this program anymore. She left the program. She joined a religion which she believes, although she's never asked her pastor, but she believes would be against the 12-step program. I personally don't believe it. I don't know any religion that would be against the 12-step program because it brings you back to it. But she's afraid to ask. Anyway, and she used to be in the program, and she's gained weight. And she says, and I said to her once, I think your problem is that you've blocked God, the God you believe in, off from you. How did you know, she said. I said, it's in the big book. That's how I know. Clearly, if you hadn't blocked God off from you, you would not have a problem with your weight. You would not have a problem with your food because you'd be sane. And that's all it is. So whether you're deeply religious or whether you have no religion whatsoever, all this program does is connect you to what you believe in, your innermost beliefs. And if you want to call that God, as I'm willing to call it God, that's fine with me. I'm desperate enough to try anything. By the time I come into this program, if someone has proven to me that I can't stop once I've started and that I can't stop from starting again, so that on my own I'm absolutely doomed, what else do I have to go to? I have nowhere else. I know every other diet that I've ever been on doesn't work, and I don't believe any other diet will work, or any support program or anything. I won't stick on it. I know that. What have I got to look for? I'll try this little thin reed that's being held out to me, and I'm going to leap across, as I've leapt across many issues of faith before. So that's the chapter, We Agnostic, and I hope you see why it is so important for both the non-religious and the religious people to read it. Now, we're on to chapter 5, How It Works. I owe so much to Joe and Charlie, and one of the things I owe to them is the point that chapter 5 is in fact chapter 5. That no matter what it's entitled, it is not the first chapter I should be reading. I should be reading from the beginning of the book and understanding the hopelessness of this illness before I get the directions for doing it. Because only if I understand the hopelessness and if I understand the nature of the solution will I grab on to these principles, which are so foreign to me. They're so different from what I'm used to. They're asking me to do things that are really weird. Now, many of you, or some of you, will know that before the book was printed, 400 copies of a draft were circulated for comments to members of AA at the time, and as well to doctors and ministers, psychologists, for their comments. And you can get a copy of this draft. You can get it on the internet. You can buy a copy of it as well. I found on the internet the original draft into which all the comments that were made were incorporated, that belonged to Bill. It was bought for $100,000 or something, probably more than that, by a person who wants to put it online. And they've put 3 pages online already with all the changes that were made. Some of the changes that were made were really significant, and they were made all the way through the book, where the draft originally said, you should do this. And a psychologist, the Harry Thibault, said, never tell an alcoholic what he should do. Tell him what you did. Tell him that it worked for you, and then he'll be led into doing it because it worked for you. So Bill made tons of changes where he changed you to we. Excuse me. I'm not going to go into those changes, but I will circulate, just for your interest, the 3 pages. One is the foreword to the first edition, and the other is How It Works, the first couple pages that we'll be reading right now. And you'll see all the changes that were made. It's really fascinating. I'll point out some of them as we read it. Rarely have we seen, page 58, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. It used to say followed our directions rather than our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. I mean, it's often been said that the smarter you are, the harder the program is for you, because you keep finding great rationalizations for not doing it. Smarter may be a wrong word. I think it would be a wrong word. The more intellectual you are, the more you're able to sort of think logically, the more you find rationalizations for not doing it. I don't think people who are intellectuals are necessarily smarter, but they love playing mind games. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So honesty is the key here. It's not whether you're suffering from grave emotional disorders or not. It's whether you're capable of being honest and direct and following a simple program and not making it complex. Just following the directions. Our stories disclose in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to, it used to say, follow directions. At some of these, we balked, we halted. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. It used to say, we doubt if you can. But we could not. With all the earnestness of our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, and we always say we deal with food cutting, bathing, and I would rather say we deal with our killer foods or our binge foods or something like that. We deal with those things that cause our cravings. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. 11/12 measures avail us nothing. All 12 steps are important. We can't just stop at one step and say, well, I've done that one. We stood at the turning point. It used to say, throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. I'm very glad they changed that one. And then they had, now we think you can take it. And they got rid of that. I'm glad they did. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And you know, we hear the steps are suggestions. No, the program is a suggestion. It's all or nothing here. It's not that each step is a suggestion. The program of recovery is suggested. Take it or leave it, but take it whole or leave it whole. And I think that's important to point out. Now, I told you that the steps changed, and I want to go a little bit into the history of the steps before lunchtime. If you turn in the third edition to page 292, or in the fourth edition to page 263, you'll see an excerpt from the man who brought AA to Chicago. And he talks about going to Akron, Ohio, where Dr. Bob Smith was. We'll learn more about Dr. Bob Smith tomorrow. And he spends 2 or 3 weeks with Dr. Bob. Then he says, the day before I was due to go back to Chicago, it was Dr. Bob's afternoon off, he had me to the office, and we spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the 6-step program as it was at that time. 3 or 4 hours, and we spend years, some of us. It's possible, as I said to you, within weeks using these methods, and I'll show you as we go through. But here were the six steps. Complete deflation. That's step one. We admit we're powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. Dependence and guidance from a higher power. That's step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Moral inventory, that's step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Confession, step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Restitution, that's step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued work with other alcoholics, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So the six steps that existed in the 35, 36, 37, 38 were 1, 4, 5, 9, 11, 12. Remember, Ebby said, you get honest with yourself, step 4. You get honest with another human being, step 5. You make amends, step 9. You pray to God for guidance, step 11. You help others without hope of reward. What did Bill add to that? Step 1, powerlessness. So you can see that the first six steps, the way they were originally, were basically Bill's description of the problem, or Dr. Silkworth's description of the problem, and the Oxford Group's five steps to a spiritual solution and to a continued spiritual solution. That's what they were. And I can show, I can read them in other respects, but I'm not sure it's that important. I've got three other versions of the first six steps, and they're all somewhat the same, but they're all step 1, step 4, step 5, step 9, step 11, and step 12. So step 2, step 3, step 6, step 7, step 8, and step 10 did not exist until Bill wrote them down one day. And here's his story about how he wrote them down. This is found in The Language of the Heart. I well remember the evening on which the 12 steps were written. I was lying in bed quite dejected and suffering from one of my imaginary ulcer attacks. 4 chapters of the book Alcoholics Anonymous had been roughed out and read in meetings at Akron in New York. We quickly found that everyone wanted to be an author. The hassles as to what should go into our new book were terrific. Terrific meaning bad. For example, some wanted a purely psychological book which would draw on alcoholics without scaring them. We could tell them about the God business afterward. A few, led by our wonderful Southern friend Fitz M., wanted a fairly religious book infused with some of the dogma we had picked up from the churches and missions which had tried to help us. The louder these arguments, the more I felt in the middle. It appeared I wasn't going to be the author at all. I was only going to be an umpire who would decide the contents of the book. This didn't mean, though, that there wasn't terrific, meaning good, enthusiasm for the undertaking. Every one of us was wildly excited at the possibility of getting our message before all those countless alcoholics who still didn't know. Here Bill goes into dangling participles, which as a grammarian bothers me, but shouldn't bother anyone else. Having arrived at chapter 5, it seemed high time to state what our program really was. I remember running over in my mind the word of mouth phrases then in current use. Jotting these down, they added up to the 6 named above, the 6 that I gave to you. 1, 4, 5, 9, 11, 12. Then came the idea that our program ought to be more accurately and clearly stated. Distant readers would have to have a precise set of principles. Knowing the alcoholic's ability to rationalize, something airtight would have to be written. We couldn't let the reader wiggle out anywhere. Besides, a more complex statement would help in the chapters to come, where we would need to show exactly how the recovery program ought to be worked. At length, I began to write on a cheap yellow tablet. I split the word-of-mouth program up into smaller pieces, meanwhile enlarging its scope considerably. Uninspired as I felt, I was surprised that in a short time, perhaps half an hour, I had set down certain principles which, on being counted, turned out to be 12 in number. And for some unaccountable reason, I'd moved the idea of God into the second step right up front. Besides, I had named God very liberally throughout the other steps. And one of the steps, I'd even suggested that the newcomer get down on his knees. I'll tell you what step that was. When this document was shown to our New York meeting, the protests were many and loud. Our agnostic friends didn't go at all for the idea of kneeling. Others said we were talking altogether too much about God. And anyway, why should there be 12 steps when we had done 5 or 6? Let's keep it simple, they said. This sort of heated discussion went on for days and nights. But out of it all, there came a tent strike for Alcoholics Anonymous. Our agnostic contingent, speared by Hank P. and Jim B., finally convinced us that we must make it easier for people like themselves by using such terms as a higher power or God as we understand them. Those expressions, as we so well know today, have proved lifesavers for many an alcoholic. They've enabled thousands of us to make a beginning where none could have been made had we left the steps just as I originally wrote them. Happily for us, there were no other changes in the original draft, and the number of steps still stood at 12. Now, There are only six, right? Remember, we're back with Dr. Bob now, and this guy who brings Chicago, who brings OA to Chicago. Listen to his description of the inventory. Dr. Bob led me through all these steps. At the moral inventory, he brought up several of my bad personality traits or character defects, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentments. We went over these at great length. Great length. This is step four and five and working out restitution. At great length, they went over these defects of character. Then finally, he asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed. And I said, yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. This picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. It was very impressive, and I wish that every AA could have the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. Dr. Bob was a very charismatic individual. He was like a saint. People looked up to him, and he was. Bill considered Dr. Bob to be an absolute saint, and there will be many different examples of why that's the case. When Dr. Bob laid his hand on you, you were healed. When Dr. Bob said, you've been an absolute idiot, you've been full of conceit and jealousy and self-doubt and you've harmed people, haven't you? You would look up at him and you'd say, yes, Dr. Bob. He would say, do you want to have those defects of character removed? Yes, Dr. Bob. Get on your knees and say a prayer and ask God to remove them. Okay, Dr. Bob. All right. You know, go out and make amends. I mean, it was that kind of incredible personality that Dr. Bob had that allowed this 3 or 4 hour session to be at great length with this kind of power. Bill was writing the steps for people who didn't have Dr. Bob's around. Hey, he didn't have Dr. Bob around. He didn't do the steps the same way that Dr. Bob did because he didn't have the same personality. So when Bill developed the 12 steps, he did them with the lone alcoholic in mind, the alcoholic who was not going to have a sponsor, was not going to have anyone to turn to, and who couldn't have any wiggle room. That doesn't mean, however, that each step has to be given the same amount of emphasis. As a matter of fact, what we'll find is that in the big book, steps one, 3 or 4 chapters. Step two, 2 or 3 chapters. We agnostic, Bill's story, a bit of there is a solution. Step four, step five, and step nine, 8 and 9, constitute the bulk of the chapters in which the other steps are discussed. And step 12, and step 11 has a lengthy discussion, and step 12 has a lengthy discussion, very lengthy discussion. And we'll find that step 6 and 7 have one paragraph each. Step 3 is a prayer. That's all it is. We'll find that. It's a decision and a prayer. and step 10 is a paragraph. Very important paragraph, but it's a paragraph. And so we'll see that the big book's emphasis is very different from the way that we normally treat the steps because we're used to the steps off the wall. We're used to reading the 12 steps. But if you look at the big book and you look at the history of the 12 steps, you'll see that the emphasis lies in the 6 steps that originally existed. Well, step 2 is given more emphasis only because it starts it off, even though it didn't originally exist. Now, we'll go back then to page 59. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's a description of the past, not of the future. Step 2 doesn't require us to believe anything. It describes what our solution was. Step 1 is the problem. We're powerless. Step 2 is the solution, power. We found a power. It's not a step you take, it's a step you understand. Oh, they found a power, I don't have that power, I better look for the power. It's not a step that you have to take. You don't wait for God to come to you in step 2. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care, you say, and direction of God as we understood him. And we'll find out that step 3 this afternoon is only a decision. It's not anything else. It's not waiting for God to turn. It's not waiting for God to take over our will in our lives. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And we're going to find as we study step 4 in the big book that the inventory is completed at step 9. It doesn't stop at step 4. That the word inventory, even though it's only used in step 4 as it's written on the wall, actually describes a process that ends in step 9. I'll show that to you this afternoon. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. It used to say we're entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. Now it says ready to have. Humbly on our knees, asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. And they got rid of those absolute aspects to them. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make complete amends to them all. Got rid of the word complete. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God. They added the word conscious contact with God. And then they added the words as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And in step 12 used to say, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after, it used to say, have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas. I'm glad they changed that. Designed to make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. That's steps 1 and 2 in 3 points. Then it used to say words like, if you're not convinced at this point, reread this book or throw it away. And I almost wish it kept saying that, because as we read in working with others, and I'll talk about that at length on Sunday, the big book has a real, what we would now call, tough love attitude towards the person who still suffers. It's basically take it or leave it. I'm not enabling you. I'm not helping you. I'm here to help you work the steps, and that's all. I'm not going to be your counselor, your therapist, your confessor, your friend. You want the steps, I'm here for you, but that's it. And you don't want the steps? Please go somewhere else. Please leave. Because I don't have time for you. I have many other people who need what I have to offer. And that's a very different way from the loving care and compassion that goes on in our program. And I'm not suggesting that love and that compassion, that care shouldn't be there. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. We're very isolated people with very low self-esteem who come into this program really hurting. And I wouldn't want to get rid of that care and compassion. But there's also a room for a lot of toughness. And I want to talk about that, about how we carry the message tomorrow. Anyway, if you're not convinced, reread this book or throw it away. Then it says, being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. What do we mean by that, and what do we do? Now, that question is, what do we mean by turning our life and will over to the care of God? Not what does it mean to make a decision, not what does it mean to do step 3. What is it that we are deciding to do? What's the end result of this decision and the action that we take? Okay? Because what is a decision? It's nothing if not followed by action. I can decide to be involved in a big book study, but if I don't get to the Victoria Hospital, I'm never going to be at that big book study. I can decide to travel to Los Angeles, but if I don't buy a ticket, get on the airplane, I won't get there, or however I get to Los Angeles, I won't get there. And so the decision of step 3 is only a decision. It didn't exist before Bill created it, and it only existed as a moment in time where Bill basically said, either take it or leave it. Make a decision or don't. But if you make a decision, here's the rest of the steps that you take to do them, to carry forth that decision. So the question here is, what do we mean by that and what do we do? What we mean by that, they're now going to describe in the next three pages about what we mean by turning our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand God. And I'm going to give it to you briefly because we're almost ready to break. That turning our, and I'm going to go into more detail though, but they talk first about turning our will over, and then they talk about turning our life over. And when they talk about turning our will, they contrast turning our will over with what we're like. And they paint a picture of us that's not very rosy, even though we may have the best intentions in the world. And that is that we suffer from the problem that we want to be in charge of life and we're not. And that is our basic problem. That is who we basically are. People who can't stand the thought that life is going on the way it is and who know exactly how it should be. And sometimes our motives are completely pure in that regard. And sometimes they're completely inner-directed and self-directed. And sometimes they're a combination of that. But that's our problem. And we have to get rid of our will and substitute for it the will of our higher power. Now, for a more religious person, that's clear what it means. Follow the dictates of your sacred scriptures or of your particular religious doctrine and faith. For someone like me, it means living a life devoted to truth, love, justice, and beauty. For people who choose the OA group as their higher power, it means living a life according to the best ideas, the best concepts, the best conscience of the group. Whatever it means living a life according to what we believe in rather than what we want. And our whole passage in this book is going to be designed to point out to us the distinction between what we want and what we should accept and what we should be. And the steps are going to tell us how to become that which we should be, which are people who follow according to the dictates of our higher power, whatever that higher power is. It's incredibly beautiful and wonderful. And the process that's set out in the book of steps 5-9 is so simple and so easy. And I know in this room there are people who have used this method and are able to say here and now, right, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks at the most, you're done. You do them over again, but you're done. And you get this spiritual awakening and you learn how to make amends and you're recovered. And it's absolutely wonderful. So that's what they discuss in the next little while, and I'm going to end with just a few jokes about decisions. Many of you have heard these jokes, I know, but they bear telling. Three frogs are sitting on a log. Two make a decision to jump off the log. 5 minutes pass. How many frogs are left on the log? Well, you've all heard it before, or you think it's a trick. My answer was, when I first heard this, three, because the other frog would have jumped off too. You know, because frogs are like that, they jump. Some might say just two. One frog is left, the frog who didn't make a decision. And the answer is three are left, because they only made a decision, they didn't jump. A guy is sitting on his porch in Flat, Kansas. And a police car drives up this lonesome road and says, Cal, you gotta get into this car. There's gonna be a flash flood here. It's gonna go past the top of your house. You gotta get in. No, I've made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. I'm okay. Police car drives on. The flash flood comes. It's up to the second story. He's hanging out of the second story. A boat comes by. Cal, get in the boat. It's gonna get higher than your roof. No, I've made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. Boat goes on. He's now on the top of his roof, hanging on to his antenna, which I guess we won't know anything about in about a couple more months when they get rid of antennas. But anyway, he's hanging on to his TV antenna. A helicopter comes by and drops a ladder. Get in, Cal. No, I made my decision. And he drowns. And he goes to heaven. And St. Peter greets him. And he says, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to the big guy. And he gets an audience with God. He says, God, where were you? And God says, I sent a police car, I sent a boat, and I sent a helicopter. What more do you want from me? A guy has a particular... Pardon me?
He wanted to stay at home.
He wanted to stay at home, yeah. A guy has a particular charity that he believes in, and he finds out that it has a cash fall problem and it's going to go broke. And it's very important for him, and he believes in it very much. He's a very religious guy. He's never prayed for himself. But he goes to his very modest room, and he gets on his knees, and he says, God, not for myself, but for this wonderful charity, we need to win the lottery. I need to win the lottery, and I'll give all my money to this charity. And I don't. We don't need the $5 million or the $10 million or whatever it is. We just need to, two numbers, give us $100,000. So just two numbers. That's all we need. And I'm going to pray. I'm going to fast. I'm going to eat just bread and water. I'm going to pray for the next week. The lottery's on Saturday. I'm going to pray for the next week, 18 hours a day to give it. And he does this. And he prays and prays and prays. And Saturday comes. And it's 3 hours, and he's on his knees. Said, "Just three more hours, God. That's all I need. Just 100. Remember, just 100,000. I'm not asking for millions. It'll go right to the charity, and it'll keep this charity alive." And suddenly, this wonderfully sunny day, clouds begin to roll in from nowhere—big, dark, black clouds. Huge, you know, just completely obscuring the sun. The street lights go on. Because it's so dark. It's just dark, black, dark. There's no light whatsoever. And suddenly, a shaft of sunlight comes through a cloud, through the curtains of his window, right onto his face, a big shaft of light. And a frustrated voice says, "Buy a ticket!" A guy like Sergeant Snorkel falls off a cliff and is hanging on to one twig that's on the edge of the cliff. And he says, "I've never prayed to God before, but if there is a God, please help me." And a voice says to him, "I'm here, my son." "What? What? I'm here, my son. Is that you, God?" "Yes, my son." Oh, thank you, thank you. God, what do I do?" "Let go of the twig." "Pardon me?" "Let go of the twig, my son." "Is there anyone else up there?" That's a person who isn't willing to give up his will and life to the care of God. It's only a decision. I'll carry the theme through. We'll break now for about an hour, and then we'll come back, and I'll talk about step three and what it means in more detail to turn your will and your life over the care of God. I'll talk about what step three is. We'll do step three, and I'll then go into the inventory process. And we will look at some forms to do step four that, if you're not aware of them, will blow your mind by how simple they are. They're not the only way of doing step four, but they are a very quick and powerful way of doing them. And we'll talk about recovery. I hope to finish step 10 at least today, so I can devote most of my time tomorrow to step 12. So thank you, and we'll come back in an hour.